This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good Thursday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I am Mary Kitzmiller from Kemp, Texas, and you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for May 11th, episode 1695. Today's show is brought to you by Horseware. Good morning, Horse World.
Good morning, Horse World. And I don't have Mary's opener. Where to go? Oh, Mary, I missed my cue.
What was the thing?
Oh, here it is.
What is your favorite day of the week?
Never stop learning, you never stop understanding. It's more in depth than just riding a horse. Exciting, knowing that for the rest of my life I could work on this and I'll never stop learning.
Well, good morning, everybody. Sorry about that rough opening there. I lost your file. It was right there, and then I accidentally hit the wrong button, and it mixed everything up.
This is what you get for poking fun at my podcasting learning progress earlier. I was so proud of myself.
Karma sucks, Glenn.
Yeah, karma.
Mary did something that was technological, and she got it right. And I said, one of these days, Mary, you're going to be a podcaster. And she said, I am getting so good at this. And I learned quickly. And I went, how long have we been doing this show, Mary? About 4 years. So here we go.
Yeah. So who has the last laugh now? how long have you been podcasting? Like, you know, a couple months, a couple years?
Smartass. All right, let's do a show.
Better look out.
Mary's on today. I got to watch it. She's tuned up.
Jennifer, the finger is ready to go.
And you've had a month. You've done some amazing things. You've almost got blown off the face of the earth. Just lots of different stuff we're going to talk about. But first, Jennifer's going to tell us what is coming up on today's show.
Well, coming up on today's Mary Kitzmiller training episode brought to you by Horseware, we are going to answer a million and one questions posted on the Horse Radio Network Auditor's Facebook page. We've got everything from head bumping to horse trailer loading. And our guest today is going to be Craig Johnson. And Mary has some very interesting questions for him. So stay tuned for the fray, folks.
Thank you. And we got a ton of listener questions. You know why I think that is? Remember the last couple months we've been like begging for them. And this month, because everybody's back out riding again. The snow melted, it's the weather's changed, and everybody in the north is riding again. So I think that's why.
Yes. And their horses are telling them, hey, yeah. Remember
Screw
how you thought
people.
I was all broke? Yeah. I have issues.
Yeah, I'm not doing that anymore. I had the winter off. I'm just going to enjoy my life. Well, a couple of different things that have gone on in your life since we talked last. One was, I'm trying to think if we do them in order here. You went to the chuck wagon races, which I was so jealous of because I you know, that's kind of on my bucket list is to sit on a chuck wagon. Now, it looks deadly and dangerous, but it is driving. So that, I guess that's why I'm interested.
Oh my gosh. And this was like the most East Texas thing I've ever done. And it, of course, took place in East Texas. And I went with Dominique Ferraro, who's been on the show.
Dominique, Zebras Are Us.
Yeah, exactly. And it was amazing. And I tell you what, if you want to get a horse broke to all sorts of different stimuli that you're not going to find anywhere else, take him to the chuck wagon races. And I took Stryker, who's a big steady Eddie Gelding, but needed to get out to town a little bit more. And so lots of interesting things happened. They fired cannons. There was, of course, the chuck wagon races. They had mule races.
Did one of you ride in the mule race?
No, everyone thought that was me. I was the one who took the picture.
You looked like it looked like you in that picture.
And the mule looked like one of my mules.
Yeah,
actually.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, next year I am bringing a mule and I'm entering up. My old Western pleasure mule, I don't think would like that. So I have to find a fast mule. But we, Dominique and I were hanging out, you know, it was the nicest people and they had a horse sale and, music and all sorts of stuff. And we were hanging out and they, you know, they had a band playing and a big bonfire and everyone's having fun. And, these people we were hanging out with said, "Hey, you want to ride on our party wagon back to camp?" And we're like, "Yeah, we do." And it was this big, these people make these party wagons. It's a big covered wagon, Conestoga looking thing. They load it up with speakers, coolers, smokers, and they just drive all over the place. Rocking. They just have a big party.
It's like a kicked up truck wagon, huh?
It is exactly that. And so we got on one of those in the dark and went up. We jackknifed it on accident. All the mules and everything were fine. But we tried to go down this creek. We had to go through the woods and down this creek, and the mules couldn't quite make it. And so they kind of went off to the left, and we had to abandon the chuck wagon.
Oh, no.
And Dominique like ran back to camp, and I got back on. I'm like, "Where'd she go?" And so it was just like really, it was a great adventure. I'm told that the one you have to go to is the one in Clinton, Arkansas. And it's, just hundreds and hundreds of acres and you just ride everywhere.
Wow. That sounds like fun. It's like Burning Man for cowboys.
It is. And they had pasture roping. So they turned out these two giant longhorn type steers. It's just in a giant 100-acre pasture and these team ropers have to rope them in the middle of a field. And, it was very, very interesting.
That is a treat. I did see a video of the mule races. Those mules can book.
Oh, heck yeah.
They can fly. Yeah. I'm surprised how fast mules can go. This sounds like something Jennifer and I would love. It really was
really fun. And, you know, I was actually worried, you know, because I've heard it's really extreme. The only time there was one minor wreck where a horse got laid out and there's a bunch of pickup riders and everything. Like he just kind of slipped and everyone was able to keep him down and get everything unhooked and there was no injuries and they handled it really, really well. Cause that's something I've never seen him in person. And I was like, "Oh, am I going to see something I don't like?" Everyone was just really masterful in how they handled the horses. And so
it was
really
neat.
They had
to step up their safety game too, because they have had issues, the truck wagon racers, especially up at Calgary and where they do the serious competitive for the money races.
Right.
They've really had to improve so that, you know, they're using the breakaway harnesses now and all of that different stuff that they never did before.
Mm-hmm.
And they've had to adjust, which is good. I mean, it's a good thing because it seemed like they were losing horses as fast as any other discipline. Right. So it needed to get adjusted. And I still want to sit on one. I think I'd die, but I still want to sit on one.
Yeah, I think if you had any like dental work and fillings in your teeth, you wouldn't by the end of that. I don't think they put any like shock absorption in those.
Do they have seatbelts? Because I really want to be seatbelted in. No.
I don't want to be seatbelted in. I want to abandon ship if that thing goes cattywampus.
That's a fun adventure, and hanging out with Dominique's a fun adventure in itself. So very, very cool. Speaking of Dominique, that leads us to our next topic. My God, Texas is the year for tornadoes. And I was really worried about you when I saw your pictures of you and the spiders in your tornado shelter. And then Dominique, I knew, was right in the path of this thing. So tell us about the tornado that went through. What town was it again?
Went through Canton, Texas. Canton, yeah. And a lot of people are familiar with Canton because it's got the oldest flea market, I think, in the country. And so it's this huge event, and a lot of people were there shopping that weekend. It didn't go over the trade days, thank goodness, because that would have been devastating. It was devastating as it was. And there were, I think, ended up being 9 reported tornadoes. And they kept going through Canton one by one to where, like, the first responders would have to go take cover. And it was one of those deals. I got on the weather app and was just looking at the path. And we were under a warning. And it's, you know, I knew we had to get to shelter. And it came within 8 miles of us. But I knew it wasn't going to hit us. But you never know. They change paths. But so we, you know, we got our herd of dogs down in the cellar and we're sitting there. And if it wasn't a spider, it was a scorpion. If
oh, that's right. It was a scorpion. Texas, I was thinking Black Widow, but they're about the same.
Yeah. I'm sure there were like a dozen of those down there, too. Yeah. If that's not the most Texas thing to outrun a tornado, getting in your storm shelter, and there's a giant scorpion.
And then you die
there
from a scorpion bite.
It's like, let's see, which do I want to take me, the scorpion or the tornado?
You're lucky there wasn't like a rattler down there.
Oh, now I'm going to be thinking about that.
Sorry.
We found 3 snakes in our chicken coop 2 days ago. So,
oh, they were having fun eating eggs, huh?
Oh yeah, I'm sure they were. I think they were in a coma because it was like they were right out in the open, and they just kind of look at you like, "What?" You know, when you open the door.
I know Dominique comes from California, so she wasn't quite used to all of this, and I think she got her eyes opened a little bit, especially since it hit like the farm next to hers or something really close.
It was very close. Well, and, you know, the week before, we had both gone to the chuck wagon races, and it was supposed to storm then. And I was texting her saying, you know, I'm not sure. There's no stalls for the horses. I don't want to get caught in these storms. And she kind of convinced me. She's like, oh, you got to bring a horse. We'll put him in my trailer, blah, blah, blah. And it ended up being fine. Nothing happened. So the next week when this was going down, she just kind of thought the same thing, like, ah, it's not going to be anything. And I started messaging her, and I'm usually not alarmist when it comes to storms because my mom is enough for both of us. So
well,
I'm usually
and let's,
cool.
Let's tell everybody that you guys did live through one.
Yes. She, you know, we were in Moore when the most giant tornado ever hit. So she has reason to be alarmist. And I'm usually kind of the one who's like, it's fine. It's probably not going to come.
That one took out your house and everything, right? I mean,
it didn't take out our house. Thank goodness. A lot of our friends, it took out the boarding stable where I used to board my horse. We helped with cleanup on that. Yeah. Pretty scary, but, So I started messaging Dominique saying, okay, here it comes. Here's a picture of the path. It's coming towards you. And she's like, I don't have a storm shelter. I'm like, get in the middle of your house, get in the bathtub, throw a mattress over you. And I think afterwards she realized, oh yeah, this is not fun. This is a thing that can happen in Texas.
Now, I think she had her eyes opened a little bit. She said she's never been as scared in her life as she was that night.
Very, you know, and some friends of hers got hit, but, you know, very fortunate didn't hit her ranch.
Well, now, the other thing that is going on is you went to a festival last weekend that was very interesting, and I saw the picture. First of all, congratulations. You are a master horseman.
Yeah, you know, that was... I had to keep from giggling every time they announced me as Master Horseman.
Master Horseman. Wow. I thought you had to be like 90 to be a Master Horseman. You know?
Me too. Well, Jack Brainerd was there, who I think is 96 now.
It's like 110.
Now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, well, it's funny because they asked me last year to be a part. This is put on by the Pirelli Foundation. It's their charitable organization. And so all the horsemen in it donated their time, which was pretty neat. And at first, I was just asked to do a Spanish pole performance because I like to do the garrocha riding. And that's all I was going to be in it for was I was just going to come out with my pole, do a little pole dancing, and then thank you very much and leave. And somehow I made it into the top billing. I went from like the second page of the website to the first page, and I thought, well, that's pretty cool. And it wasn't until I got there that it hit me how what a big deal that was, because some of the names they had there, they had Pat and Linda Pirelli, Martin Black, who's an amazing horseman, Jack Brainerd, of course, Doug Jordan, who's really, really an amazing cutting horse trainer. Who else was there? David Lichtman, who's a also Pirelli trainer, big into Liberty. There's more. I'm forgetting them. Who they are, but a lot of these people have connection not only through the Pirellis but through Tom Dorrance and Ray Hunt, and so it was just amazing. It was a fantastic weekend. I learned a lot, and one thing I have to say, and this is props to the Pirelli people. You guys know who you are if you're into Pirelli. I've done a lot of clinics, I've done a lot of expos, a lot of events, and usually at these things, you've got at least a handful of people that you're not sure they're going to be on their horse by the end of the weekend, and you're just trying to keep them from dying type of deal. And there was nothing like that at this event. Everyone who was there, the participants, you know, their horses were so lovely and calm and educated, and everything was just so soft and wonderful, and almost to the point they had a cute little drill team that would do flag ceremonies. They hired this, you know, group of little rodeo girls who did flags, and their horses were great, but it was such a stark contrast when I saw these horses that are, you know, kind of in tie downs and, you know, running around really fast. I was like, wow, that looks so different than what I was just seeing with all these horses in the clinics. Just everything was just really amazing. You don't experience that very often, where like 100% of the horses are really chill and happy to be working for their people, and everything's really soft. So they're doing something right over at the Pirelli program.
And, you know, we do, he does, and I have too in the past picked on him because he can be a little bristly sometimes. But that doesn't mean the program doesn't work, right? And I think that's what you're saying, and that's what you saw.
Yeah. You know, it's easy to poke fun at something that's like as huge and massive as the program is. And it's really marketed. And it's kind of, you know, people poke fun at the commercial aspect of it. And I understand all of that. But yeah, the horses, when I did my clinic, I also got to do a workshop where I taught people how to work with the Spanish pole. And our workshops were very short. I had an hour and 15 minutes. And I had said early on, I was like, I could do 10 people in mine. And as it was getting closer, I'm like, why did I say 10 people? I have to get 10 people and 10 horses with a 14-foot long pole not to die.
Did you have 14 poles?
yeah, I had 10, actually 13-foot long poles.
Oh, wow.
And
that's a lot of poles going everywhere.
It is a lot of, yeah, it's crazy. And I've done clinics before with the Garocha where, you know, it took a long time to get some horses like ready for it because they were really upset by it and you had to calm them down. And so I was starting to fret like, oh my gosh, I can't jam all I need to teach these people to successfully work for these poles in an hour and 15 minutes. And so I'm planning it out in my head. Okay, what am I going to do first? Okay, I got to check this out. And I asked everyone in my clinic, I'm like, how many of you are confident riding one-handed? Because that's the first obstacle. Everyone raised their hands. I was like, oh, sweet. Okay. So I did have them do a couple exercises so I could check them out. And everyone was great. I just needed to hand out a few pointers. And then there were two horses I knew that needed special help with the pole because their owners had approached me and said he's scared of it. So I said, I'm going to work with these two people. And here's some exercises the rest of you guys can do. But if you feel pretty good, go ahead and get on and start doing what we practiced on the ground. And I thought I would have to help five or six people get on their horse, hand them the pole, make sure everything was okay. When I finished helping those two people, I turned around and everyone's got a pole in their hand riding around. Their horses are so chill. I was like, whoa, okay, you guys make me look great. It was awesome.
Well, that's good. I'm glad that worked out. And I'm glad that I work with a master horseman.
I know. They would introduce me. They're like, you're a master horseman, Mary Kitzmiller. And I had to just not giggle and like act all serious and impart my wisdom to the masses.
That sometimes happens to me when I go to podcasting events and I'm introduced as this, you know, master podcaster. And I'm like, I've just been talking to people for a few years, you know, I just get on a microphone to talk. How hard is that? And I have great co-hosts. It's a co-host like you that make me look good. Right. So
that's true. No, I saved your butt a while back there.
You did.
I mean, someone's got to hold this together.
You know, Mary comes across as this innocent little Texas girl. She is not. People, when you get to know her, she is not like that. She is a mean older sister, or younger sister in this case.
I'm like a grizzled old coal miner in the body of a cowgirl. It's like I've seen things, and I'm not messing with you.
Let's do a training tip. How about lumber? Don't be a lumber, be a splitter. I have no idea what that... A lumper?
Lumper.
Lumper.
Yes.
Don't be a lumper, be a splitter. Okay, so I have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay, so I was reading over the 3 million amazing training questions we got. You guys got some great questions. And a lot of these things... can be, you can get started on solving it if you change your mindset. So lumper and splitter, those are two terms that I've heard in the clicker training world. Alex Curlin, who we've had on the show, has used them in the past. And it's talking about, it's in terms of lumping behaviors and approximations together or splitting them. So for instance, we have a few questions about trailer loading. And I see this all the time, why people fail at getting their horse in the trailer is we think, okay, what do you want your horse to do? It's like, well, I want to be able to lead my horse out to the trailer and have him load right up, and I should be able to tie him and close the divider and go down the road without any problems. That's one lumped together thing that can be split down into a million tiny behaviors and approximations, and tiny, tiny steps is what I'm talking about. Because when you get to thinking, I want my horse to do this and this and this and this and this and this, and you're trying to get that all done at once, that is where you run into panic, fear, frustration, sometimes even aggression. And that's where we have these
and
problems.
Sometimes even the horse gets upset. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. That's a good point.
You got panic, fear, frustration for the human too.
Yes. Yes, sometimes it's us who's crying because we're late for the horse show, and sometimes it's the horse who's like, what are you doing? But so with the trailer loading, and we'll get more into the specifics of trailer loading, that can be broken down into so many tiny steps. Can you lead your horse? Sometimes I've seen people try to get their horses in trailers that they can't lead from point A to point B. That's a thing you can work on. And okay, getting your horse to be near the trailer sometimes is a big issue. How can I get him in the trailer if he sees it from 50 feet away and panics? Why do I keep trying to force him to the trailer if 50 feet back he was clearly showing me he's upset? So getting him around the trailer, maybe instead of getting him in the trailer, get him to step on strange surfaces that make noise. A lot of horses that won't get in the trailer can't do obstacle work either. So that's something you can work on at home. And I don't mean to be answering the trailer loading questions so fully, but I'm on a roll. So that's one example. You can break that down. You would be surprised at how many times you can split a problem or a challenge into 100 tiny million steps. And it does seem tedious, and it seems like it's going to take forever. And yes, laying the groundwork will take a little time. But man, once you do it, then when you put it all back together into the finished product, it goes so smoothly. So there's most of the training questions that I'm looking at in answering today, I will be telling you guys to break it down. So anytime your horse gets stuck and you feel like you have to get hard and your horse is hard, and a lot of you guys have written me say, I want to fix this problem without swatting my horse. And so if you feel like you're at that threshold where, man, you know, I don't want to whack you, but something's got to happen, that's the time when you should break it down. And that breaking things down is going to clear up a lot of the frustration on both sides and confusion, because all that frustration, anger, aggression, fear, a lot of that stems from confusion. The horse does not know what you want, or you're asking something the horse doesn't think he can give. It's kind of like, I am terrified of heights, terrified. And I was watching a neat, behind the scenes video of the movie Divergent, and they were talking with the stuntmen, and this stunt coordinator had this stunt woman who was supposed to drop off of this building and land in a net, and he said she's never done a drop that high before. So instead of just pushing her off a building and saying, okay, cameras are rolling, you got to do it right now. He had her jump from a really short distance into the net and practice what she was supposed to do. And then he had her go a little higher and then have her drop and then a little higher and then have her drop. So by the time she did the final drop, this is the one that's going on camera, it was very easy. And so it took, you know, a few extra minutes to break it down rather than pushing someone past the point where they just, they can't handle it. And you and I have both been there. So imagine what it's like for the horse.
So I've got a question about the process of breaking it down, being a splitter. When you set out to work on or teach or repair a behavior, do you start out saying, I'm going to break it down into these five sections at the outset? Or do you say, well, I'm going to try this first step and then just let the horse figure out how far down it needs to be broken down? Is there a set plan or is it more fluid?
A little bit of both. It does not hurt to sit down, have a game plan, write it down, make a little checkbox. First, I want the horse to do this five times comfortably, and then we could do this. So you can get really analytical if you want. A lot of times I let experience tell me first what I think is going to work for the horse, and then I let the horse fill in the blanks. So I've helped a lot of horses with trailer loading problems. Dozens and dozens and dozens of horses. And if you tell me my horse won't get in the trailer, I usually have kind of a vague idea of where we're going to start. But sometimes the horse will either say, oh, I know that. That's fine. I can do that. And I can say, okay, well, let's try this then. Or sometimes the horse is like, I'm not even halter broke. Maybe start there. And so I let the horse kind of finish that.
Kind of like you have to do with boyfriends when you first start, right?
It's exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. You just slowly mold them.
Yeah.
Slowly mold them into your own so that they're everything that you want. That'll work.
So let's take a break for our sponsor. We have Horseware, of course, is our sponsor for this episode, and we love them. And then Mary's going to come back. We have some time before we get. And by the way, you don't start with small guests. We have Craig Johnson coming on a little bit later, so we're going to talk to him. But in the meantime, we have lots of questions from listeners that Mary and Jennifer will contribute to that. But first, we have to hear about Amigo.
Another long, tough fly season is right around the corner. And the only choice for this fly season are the Amigo range of fly sheets, because they're built tough and feature the latest in design comfort, bug-busting technology, and sun-protecting fabrics. And the Amigo range has a fly sheet for every budget, from the Amigo Bug Buster Vamoose with no fly zone to the Amigo Bug Rug fly sheet. Find Amigo fly sheets at your local or online retailer, or you can visit horseware.com. That's horseware, horseware.com.
All right, let's go to our questions. Kelly sent this one in. Kelly Portner said, clicker training exercises for teaching a horse to stand for mounting. And this is a very common one. Jennifer just had to go through this actually with Nigel because he wasn't so good when she got him standing for mounting. So want to take that one?
Yes. All right. That's for me, right?
Yes. Yep.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that's a great and very common question. And another question where we can kind of apply the whole lumping and splitting thing to. So stand for mounting. This is very common. A lot of people can get their horse to line up to the fence or the mounting block, and at the last second they move. Or sometimes we can't even get that much. The horse is antsy, doesn't want to stand still. So my question would be, can your horse stand still anywhere? And this is different from standing tied. Can you go out into the middle of the arena with your horse with no agenda and just stand with him? Would he stand still? And this is an exercise I started adding to my program only a few years ago, and only because I was clicker training. So you don't have to be a clicker trainer to do this. But what I learned is it started out as a food manners exercise where, and I've talked about this before, where I stand next to my horse and I reward him for standing quietly and not biting me. Because, you know, I have food on me usually when we're doing this and it, you know, the emotions run high. They're very overstimulated because, oh my gosh, there's food and I know you have it and you've given me food before. So we work on that and you have to start with just a few moments at a time and then you can build up. And I initially started doing this just because I read it in a book that I'm supposed to do this, you know, to keep my horse from being mouthy. And it wasn't till a lot of trial and error that I realized I was not doing this nearly enough with my horses. They were still antsy. They were still overstimulated. They still, man, were really excited about food and they're young anyway, and they're green and they want to look at their friends and call out to, you know, other horses and move around. And they're just, you know, they're feeling their oats. So I thought, okay, I need to work on this to the max. And the first horse I did it with was my horse Guthrie. And the reason why I really committed to this was he'd be great at home. But when I would do demos, oftentimes I'm in the middle of the arena. There's no place really to tie up. I don't have an assistant to hold my horse. And I'd have to be standing there holding him and trying to talk to people. And when I'm talking to people, I'm not paying attention to him. So he would start kind of trying to bite my sleeve or antsy around, or he wanted to go play with some obstacles that were set up. And, you know, I'm trying to show how broke he is. And so I thought, okay, we need to mimic this at home. And what I did was I actually made a mark for him to stand on. And I said, you're going to stand here. And you'll get rewarded for standing here. And once we did that a couple of times, like every time you come to the mat, I'm going to reward you. Then I said, okay, now I want you to hold it a few moments, which was a pretty big feat in and of itself. A lot of times we want our horse to stand still long enough for us to climb up on the mounting block, get our reins gathered, get the stirrup adjusted, put our weight in the stirrup and swing over. Well, that's several moments in time. And we try to get them to do that for a long period of time when they can't even stand for a moment or two. So this is what I worked on with this horse. I said, okay, just hold it for a moment. And I was able to get him to hold it for a few seconds at a time until he could hold it for about like 5 or 10 seconds. And I would reward him, you know, anytime he'd stand for longer periods, I'd reward. So then what I did is I took this to the nth degree. I said, okay, I'm going to start walking around you like I'm talking to a crowd. And I'm going to count my steps. And let's pick the number 5. Can I walk around you for 5 steps without you moving? You're allowed to shift your weight. You're allowed to put, you know, you're allowed to pick up a foot and put it down. You can even take a foot off the mat as long as you put it right back on. So I had some rules. And I gave him a whoa cue before I started walking. So I just kind of pet his head, told him whoa. And I walked off for 5 steps. And when he stood for 5, I clicked. And rewarded him. And I said, okay, now that you've done 5, you can do 6. And then I did 6. And then I did 7. And sometimes I'd have to start over because I'd get on like the 6th step and he'd move. So I'd put him right back and I'd have to start my count over again. And I was very diligent with this. I didn't do this for hours on end. I broke this up into several short sessions over weeks. And my goal to get my number of steps that I was shooting for, how long can you stand still, was 300 steps. And so 300 steps is several minutes of time. If a horse can stand still for the count of 300 without constantly having to be encouraged or corrected, then that horse really has that behavior learned well. And I ended up getting to like 137 before I kind of abandoned it. And I need to go back to it again. He's had a year off just being out to pasture. But what happened when I could get my horse to stand still for that long a time? Something amazing happened. All of a sudden, he could stand still for mounting because he'd been rewarded so heavily for standing quietly. He only had, and I never punished him. If he left, I just gently grabbed his rope, put him back, told him, whoa, didn't reward him for, you know, for leaving and coming back. I just said, no, we're going to do it again. But I didn't chase him off or, you know, pull on his lead shank or anything like that. So he only associated standing still with lots of reward, lots of praise. So it just became something that he liked to do almost by default. It was amazing. I thought I was just working on food manners and just working on, can you stand still while I'm talking to people without embarrassing me? But all of a sudden, everything got better. He stood still beautifully for mounting. He stood still much better when I tied him up to groom on him. Anytime I would have someone come up and ask me questions while I was leading him from point A to point B at an expo, he would stand quietly because that behavior was so ingrained. I don't think we work on this enough because we're so used to coming out and thinking, I'm going to ride my horse and we're going to work on all those lead changes today because I really wanted to work on those lead changes. And we're going to go do these jumps and we've got a trail ride we've got to go to. And we don't think about the foundation of, hey, can you just stand still for a few minutes? And it's just good quality time to spend with your horse. So long story short, I would say get your horse, work on just standing. You don't have to be a clicker trainer to do this and do it several times throughout the day and reward your horse, praise him, pet on him, scratch on him. Do it during your ride. Do it during your groundwork. Just practice just being with your horse, standing with your horse. So that would be a good start to tackling your mounting block issues.
Jennifer, do you have anything to add? Up, Jennifer.
I think she fell asleep.
You're on mute. Yeah, I think she's on mute.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm on mute, yeah. Now I feel really bad because neither Scooter nor Nigel are very good about standing still when we take them away from home. They're all kind of amped up. So now I feel really bad because now we just need to take them away from home and have them stand around.
Well, start this at home because
they're pretty good at home, yeah.
Uh-huh. But, you know,
That begs the question now that I think about it. When you have a horse that is good about it at home and maybe doesn't go away from home very often like ours. So when they do go away from home, it's a big deal. What we tend to do now, maybe we're completely off track here, is we tend to just take them out and just hand walk them until they kind of get that, oh my God, I'm in a new place and I'm buggy eyed thing out of their system. And then they settle in pretty good and they'll stand. Are we on the right track or are we doing it completely backwards?
I think that's actually great. I worked for a reining trainer, and this guy was a tough trainer. He was fair with his horses, but very demanding, very strict, very tough. We were showing three-year-olds at futurity events, so it's a lot of training in a little time. But one of the things he did that I still do today, and it made a huge difference, is when we went to these reining shows, you know, the classes would be spread out over a week, so we had a lot of time. And he would just have me get on all the three-year-olds who were young, and this is maybe their first or second or third show. And the first day was kind of a gimme. Like, you know, I'd warm them up, make sure they're not going to kill me. But I would just walk them around the pen. He said, don't try to get their head down. Don't train on them. Just walk them. Walk them, jog them, let them see the arena. And just kind of camp out on them. So I've learned that that's made a huge difference with my horses is when, again, we get to a show and we think, I got to do this and my class is here and I've got to memorize this pattern. We have to work on this pattern until midnight tonight and da 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 da. And then we panic if our horse is spooking at the arena and we're like, he's not going to show well. I get there early enough, whether I have an hour or a whole day before my class and say, okay, this period of time is your time. I'm going to make sure we're safe. Make sure you're not running off or anything like that. But look where you want to look. If you need to walk 10 feet off this side of the arena because it's a little scary, totally fine. We're just going on a trail ride. And then the next day, I can actually pick up the reins and say, okay, let's start getting ready for your class. So having that one day, it let me get centered and not be too, like, expecting too much out of my horse because I just have it mentally in my mind. This is your gimme day. You know, look around. Do what you need to do. Stretch out your muscles. If your head comes up, I don't care. We're not going to work on turns or spins or anything. We're just getting your muscles warmed up. That's it.
I think Glenn's on mute this time.
Sorry, I think I'm going to give you perhaps.
See? That's because we're professionals here at Horse Radio Network.
I'm a podcast master.
This is karma striking again.
Okay. Brenna sent this one in. It's a follow-up to that one. It's a follow-up to the whole trailering issue. And this is something that, boy, this is so psychological. This is a tough one. My horse fell in a trailer in 2015. not her trailer, and it isn't having anything to do with trailering. He's been all over the country in his previous life, so I know he's traveled a lot before, but, you know, and we have had that happen. I mean, we've got to a show once where we got there, and the horse's legs were straight up in the air. And, you know, that's a mental trauma, you know, and a physical trauma together, which traumatizes all of us, right? When we get hurt. We have that mental, physical thing too. So how do you overcome that when they associate that little box for something that's going to kill them or make them hurt really bad?
You know, I'll tell you something that worked with me personally in a fear that I had, and it made me really think about how I could approach the same issues with my horses is, you know, I start a lot of colts. So I hit the ground a fair bit every so often. You know, it's just one of those things. And I didn't realize it, but I had kind of built up a lot of trauma in my head to where my hands were starting to shake when I'd climb up on that colt. And I got really kind of aversive to wanting to put the first rides on a colt because, you know, I just had this fear, this unexplainable, like in the pit of my stomach, and logic couldn't fix it. You know, I'm like, I've done this before. I have experience. This horse is fine. I know he's fine. But well, I just
isn't that how we all are when we're expecting pain? I mean, that's what
exactly. Right? Yeah.
Self-preservation.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Wanting to stay alive.
So I had a couple traumas that just, you know, and logically I couldn't explain them away. Just like we can't explain it to our horse. Listen, you're fine. You know, that one time you weren't, but now you are.
My trailer's better than their trailer.
Exactly. Yeah. So I had to think, okay, what helped me was I had to think, where is the fear coming from? Where is that point where I'm like, this is the point of no return and I have to leave. And so I thought, well, can I do groundwork? I'm like, yeah, no, I'm fine with groundwork. No problem. That doesn't scare me at all. Okay. So I can do that. Can I flap the stirrups on my saddle and do all that stuff in preparation for getting on? Yeah, I'm totally fine with that. Not a problem. Okay. When is that moment where I'm like too much? And for me, it was swinging my leg over and getting that other stirrup. I could stand up in my stirrup. I was like, no fear here. No problem. I could climb on a horse bareback. No problem. I could lay halfway over the saddle, even ask my horse to move around as I'm laying halfway over the saddle. No fear there. I'm fine. But it was that swinging my leg over that and finding that other stirrup, because it happened a couple of times where as I was trying to find the other stirrup, this horse exploded and injured me. And so I thought, okay, that's the point right there. Because before my hands were starting to shake just starting a colt, like just handling the colt. And I thought, where does it become so bad that I'm like, this is where that fear is coming from, and it's swinging my leg over. So what I did is I sat down and I thought, okay, here are some things I can do to make that better. And it turns out I wasn't flexing my horses enough. I had kind of abandoned that, and I had to work on that because I thought, you know, if I have my horse's head around, I can control that. So I did things I could control. And when I did that, then I was fine. Because once I could get a colt walking, fear's gone. It was just that I found that one spot. So your horse has that one spot too. So when we're leading our horse to the trailer, again, we're lumping a bunch of stuff together. We're thinking, I've got to go to the show. I've got to get my horse to the vet, whatever. So we're thinking about leading our horse out, getting him onto the trailer, tying him up, closing the divider, closing the door, and driving off. But there's a point where your horse is saying, no, this is too much. And sometimes it's in the parking lot where our trailer's parked. Sometimes it's 50 feet away from the parking lot where your horse is saying, here's the fear. I have this fear. So what I'll do is I'll work there. Can I control your feet out in this parking lot? Can I get you to yield your hindquarters? Because that's how I get back to a horse's mind. So I'm going to tell the horse, listen, we're not going to the trailer. Let's just work on this right here. Can you go forward? Can you go around me? Can you yield your hindquarters? How about moving your shoulders? And I'll work through those things until the horse says, okay, I can do that. And then what I might do, if I have time, I might put him up for the day. Say, that was great. You know, you got over that. And then I'll say, okay, you can work 50 feet away from the trailer. Let's get closer. And again, I'm not going to get that greedy predator mind of trying to shut my horse in the trailer. I'm going to say, the trailer's here, but let's work around the trailer. And the horse is going to be nervous at first. And I'm going to work him through it. And then once I get up to the trailer, I'm still not going to try to put him in the trailer. I'm going to say, listen, can I send you around to the right side of the trailer? Great. Now, can I send you to the left side of the trailer? Can I send you in between me and the opening of the trailer? I'll do that several times. A lot of times that's where I have a big issue, is the horse will not go back and forth between me and the opening of the trailer, because they think I'm going to put them in, and they get that fear, just the same way I got fear about getting on a colt. So I work on that. Just, you know, yeah, the trailer's here. Don't worry about that. Let's work on this. Just go back and forth between me and the trailer, nice and easy. And I'll keep working on that till the horse goes, okay, I can do that. And that would be another good moment to retreat. Either lead them away, let them eat some grass, put them away for the day, whatever. And then there's a big threshold between doing that and actually getting in the trailer. So what I'll do is I'll say, okay, I'm going to put a wooden plank on the ground or a railroad tie or a pole or something in between me and the mouth of the trailer that you have to walk back and forth over. And the horse will do that. I'll say, okay, great. Now let's start working on going up to the mouth of the trailer. Can I get you to put your nose in the opening? Perfect. Wonderful. And as soon as they do that, I'll take them away. I'll say, okay, can I get you to put your nose and a little bit more of your face? Now, can I get you to put your nose and your eyes and your ears in the trailer? Now your nose, your eyes and your ears and your neck. Now that you're all the way up to your legs, can you put one leg on and then step them off? And I'll do that millions of times. One leg on, one leg off, one leg on, one leg off. Lots of praise. Keep it relaxed. If they ever get tense and tight, go backwards. And that way the horse just gets this chance. First of all, you're not going to make them think that the horse thinks that if you get 2 feet in, you're going to try to shove the rest of them in. And they're like, no, I'm not going to do it. So that's where you as a person have to say, no, this is not about getting you on the trailer so I can go down the road. This is why you have to have a lot of extra time to do this. And I'll do this with all 4 feet, 2 feet on, 2 feet off, 3 feet on, 3 feet off, 4 feet on, 4 feet off. Once I get them in the trailer, I'm not closing anything on them. I'm not tying them up. If they want to run backwards out of it, I let them. I go with them, keep their nose faced toward me so they can't run off. And I let them run backwards as much as I want. And I say, okay, you've done that. Would you like to try again? And that way you're taking that agenda out of it. And the horse will start to look at you and think, maybe she doesn't want to trap me in this scary thing. Maybe she's not going to slam the door shut on me as soon as I get inside. Maybe she'll wait till I feel okay about it and then close the door. And so, you know, with a horse that's had trauma, it's going to be tedious. It's going to be a little time, but keep everything at that low level of energy. That'd be my greatest tip to you.
And that's, you know, we had the same thing when we did with my pony, with the Hackney. It was the same way. And now, and Jennifer, explain a little bit about Monty's method, because that's kind of the same thing, but it adds some a twist to it. So talk a little bit about Monty's method, which we've found so effective.
I think, Mary, you very much touched on several key points of any good horsemanship, in that you need to recognize when the horse is about to reach that stress point and take him out of the situation before he tips over. Because once he's tipped over, it's your fault as the human. He's going to blame you. And you take them away. So with Scooter, what we had to really, really, really start from the beginning. It's kind of ironic. When we got him, he literally walked right into the trailer. Well, we kind of had to pick him up.
He was starving, though. I mean, we could pick him up with two hands.
Yeah, we picked him up and threw him in there. And he's like, whatever. But the next time we tried to trailer him somewhere, the whole, you know, his real trailering issues came out. And we had to start from the absolute beginning of, we needed to teach him to move away from the pressure, basically halter break him. Because he wouldn't lead wherever you wanted to lead. He couldn't, if he wanted to go place A and you wanted to go place B, he would either stop or more than likely just turn and walk away from you and drag you along like a sled dog. So we had to break it way, 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 way down. And we had to keep re-proving. And that's, I think, another thing that you touched on that many, many, many times we forget, is you need to keep proving the behavior. When they will walk up to the trailer and put their head in and stand quietly until you back them away, don't assume because it worked the first day that 10 days later when you try it again, you can just skip that step. You really better confirm it, because I got myself into trouble and gave Nigel a giant bonk on the noggin because I skipped that step. I assumed because we'd done it several times before. Oh, he's got that part. I'll just skip it and not pay attention to his physical cues that he's getting stressed. I ignored his cues. He flew out of the trailer and bonked his noggin. My fault. Trainer mistake. So those are keys to any good training, including Monty or clicker training, or just recognize those things. And if you're not sure, take a step back and go, well, let's reprove it. And yesterday or 5 days ago, they would walk in and stand with their head inside the trailer and be happy. You can't punish them 10 days later if they don't get that behavior, because that's going to take you backwards. Because that's what we want to do as a human. You had this 10 days ago. Why won't you do it? Well, go back one more step, get their nose to the trailer, and start again.
I saw this fantastic article on, it's by someone called the Equine Behaviorist. They've had some really good blog posts, and it's called The Dead Horse
Test. Yeah, I think he's on Horse Talk New Zealand, maybe. I see his posts, yeah.
Ah, this is called The Dead Horse Test, and it sounds morbid.
I was just going to say, wait a minute.
Yeah. So, when we're talking about what is and isn't a behavior, you want to apply the dead horse test to it. So it's pretty much, if a dead horse does it, can or can't do it, it determines whether your thing is behavior. So most of the time we think of, and we'll punish our horse based on something they're not doing. Like, my horse won't get in the trailer, so we punish them. My horse won't pick up his feet, so we punish him. My horse won't cross the creek. Well, what does a dead horse do? A dead horse also won't get in a trailer. A dead horse also won't pick up his feet. A dead horse also will not cross a creek. So those aren't behaviors. It's not something you can punish your horse for. So instead, we need to change what we're thinking, you know, change our thinking in thinking, okay, let's think of what is actually a behavior. Like, the horse steps onto the trailer, the horse picks up their feet, the horse crosses a creek. And if you start thinking about that and thinking about what you want your horse to do instead of what your horse isn't doing, then you're starting to build a game plan on how to train. It's impossible to punish something your horse isn't doing. They're not going to understand, and usually they're not doing it because they're afraid anyway. So that's something that kind of plays with my mind a bit. I'm still wrapping my brain about its meaning.
All right, I think we'll have time for one more. Jennifer will try and get our guest on here. But first, we have to hear from our terrific sponsors. And then we're going to come back, and we're going to talk. I have another question here that we'll make sure that we get done before we do our guest.
They say a good rider can hear his horse speak to him, but a great rider can hear his horse whisper. The years he's given me, nobility without conceit, friendship without envy, beauty without vanity, a loyalty without compromise. I borrowed freedom when we rode. The history of mankind and civilization rode with us. His body took the weight of mine, and I was carried through. I can still hear that whisper.
Thank you to Horsewear for their continued support of the Mary Kitzmiller episode. Jennifer's getting our guest on. I don't think we're going to have time for another question before, but we probably will. Or maybe we'll have him help answer a question or two. But
I don't know if you have time for a glowing testimonial of Horsewear by yours truly.
Yeah, we have time for that. we always have time for that.
Yeah, well, so I don't know how much I've gushed about my horse Guthrie, a time or two.
Maybe a few times.
Among his many things that we have to deal with is he has the worst skin I've ever dealt with. It takes the form of, sometimes it's horrible, horrific skin allergies. Sometimes it's fungal. Sometimes it turns into a bacterial infection.
That horse has hoof problems, skin problems.
I don't know how he survived. in West Texas, but he's such a big baby. He's got special shoes on now. So this horse, usually this time of year, he looks like a leper. And he's allergic to flies, but also the no-see-ums. And they bite him and they make him itch. And then he rubs himself bloody and raw. And then more bugs jump on him. And he looks horrible. I can't take him anywhere. And I've put fly sheets on him. And he sweats horrifically under them and rubs holes in them because he's still itchy like crazy. And the fly sheets I had in the past didn't have belly guards, so he'd still get a big gaping sore on his belly. And he's just a mess. I bought a horsewear fly sheet, and I can't remember the exact name of it, but it's got permethrin baked into it. And of course, my first question, I happened to run into a horsewear rep when I was buying this. I said, okay, my horse is allergic to that. Of course, is this going to affect him? And she said, it's not like soaked in it. It's kind of baked into the fiber, so it shouldn't be a problem. And turns out it wasn't. He looks the most beautiful he has looked in 3 years. I have not seen him rub against any trees. He has not torn one single hole in this fly sheet, and he wears it every day outside in the pasture, and he looks amazing. I haven't seen him look like this since I got him 3 years ago.
And which one was it? Was the Amigo?
I believe so. Yeah, I believe so. I will look for the specific
model
brand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's terrific. Good to hear that. And we just did a product review on that particular fly sheet last week, I think, on Stable Scoop. It's the one that comes up over their neck and the whole thing, the belly, it has the belly guard and all that stuff.
Yeah. And it even comes low. It's like almost down to his knees.
Yeah. And the tail flap is longer too, right?
Yeah.
It comes way down. Yep. That's the one. That's the Amigo. And we did a review on that on Stable Scoop last week. And they said the same thing. They said they also noticed that the flies don't even just get near because of the fabric, of what's built into the fabric, the fly repellent.
And see, usually, and I can't cover his legs because he tears the boots off, but his legs are bloody even if I get the rest of him covered. He has not one fly bite on his leg. I'd never see him swishing his tail or stomping his feet. And the rep was even telling me, she's like, you could hang this in your barn and flies will stay away. And I haven't tried that yet.
And they said you can wash it up to 70 times and it sticks. You know, the fly stuff's still there. Now, I don't know. You know, I don't know.
I've had it for 2 months and haven't had to wash it once because I'm afraid to wash it.
Well, I was just
going to
say, for those of us that wash our blankets at all, if you wash it 70 times, we're probably going to be about 100 years old. So, the horse will be long gone, one or the other. All right, good. Well, let's head over to our guest.
All right, we have with us once again NRHA Million Dollar Rider and World Champion Reigning Trainer, Craig Johnson. How are you, Craig?
I'm great, Mary. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I was just talking about the Festival Magnifico this weekend because you were there and saying how amazing it was. What was your experience like doing that this weekend?
Oh, I thought it was fantastic. I enjoyed all the clinicians that were there, and you know, of course, you and I'm sure you named the list of who all was there. And it was an educational experience for me as well. I got to watch as much as I could possibly get to. And you know, it, just like Jack Brainerd told me one time, he said, "Yeah, if there's any one thing I've learned, there's still so much to learn." And boy, is there!
Hey, Craig,
it was an exciting event.
I think all Mary got out of it, what Craig, was that they kept calling her a master horseman. I think she was just stuck on that the whole weekend.
I just got a huge inflated
ego. You did do that. That was well printed. It was the big sign in the arena. I think that is what it was. It just kept saying, "Master Horseman,
Mary
Kitzmiller."
Right.
Yep. I was walking around a couple inches
but she
taller.
Is. No, it was great. I enjoyed your demonstrations. They were so cool.
Awesome. Thank you. Have kind of an interesting story. I got to hear a little bit about it, but you have a little history with Pat Pirelli and a particular horse named Sailing Smart, and he's recently come back to your barn. So tell us a little bit about that horse and why he's so special to you.
Well, Sailing Smart is a horse that I'd had in training for a customer years ago. In the mid-90s, something like that. And he's by Smart Chicolina. And he's just one of the good horses that I had. I'd won the world on him and showed him at derbies and fraternities and things like that. And did really well. Also, international competition, he'd won gold medals. And this horse was, though he's obviously extremely talented, I'd had horses that I'd say maybe had just a touch more physical ability for sure. But none of them had a better attitude or heart or mind or tried as hard as he did, you know, which is why he won what he did. And we all know that, you know, a lot of talent with a bad attitude still doesn't win much. But, you know, if you get a horse with a good attitude, you can just have tons of fun. And anyway, so it was that kind of horse for me to train up and to go show. And as time went on, the customer determined that he wanted to sell the horse. So he's actually he's the only stud I ever bought. Shortly after I bought him, Pat Pirelli saw him and he said, you know what, I'd like to have part of him too. And so he bought into him and it was about at that time that I thought, you know what, he's won everything he needs to win. We decided to send him down to Florida for Pat to, enjoy down there and breed some mares and stuff like that. And so that's where Sailing Smart has been for the last 15 years. And, all of a sudden just this spring, it kind of hit me that, you know what, it has been 15 years since I've, seen him even. But time moves on and boy, now he's, like 20 something and it's sad to think about, but someday, is probably going to be the end. And I got to thinking, if there's any one place I'd love for him to be, it's under that tree right here on this ranch when that sad day happens. So I called Pat and I said, I started to explain the story and get into a lengthy conversation about it. And Pat stopped me after about 2 minutes and he said, I know where you're headed and I totally understand. Come get him. I thought that was just the kindest thing. So my old stud that handed me his heart more times than any horse ever needed to is back at the ranch. He looks as good as he ever had. They took such immaculate and beautiful care of him. I couldn't be happier. So here he is 25 and we jump on him bareback every day and go for a walk and trot. And he's got his pen to be turned out in and he's breeding mares and we're having a blast. I hope he lasts for another 25 years, but like I said, whenever that sad day comes, there's a beautiful tree on my ranch where Sailing Smart's going to be.
That's amazing. It's amazing how some of those horses just get to you. I was listening to you talk. Yeah. And I was listening to you talk about him this weekend. And you mentioned that before about how no horse has ever given you his heart more than he has. And it made me wonder, you've ridden hundreds of horses. I've ridden a few. And there have been plenty that are just great to get along with. They're good horses, trainable, talented. What's the difference between a horse that's just nice to get around and one like him where, he's just so special, you have to have him come back to your ranch? Like, what do you mean when you say a horse has handed you his heart?
Well, obviously, we got an amazing connection. I trained him for, 6 or 7 years, and generally when we get a horse in training, we're lucky if we get 30 days, with that kind of a connection, it was amazing how he got to where he could think what I was thinking and feel what I was feeling. And I could do the same with him. So it was just almost a little bit spooky, with that kind of time on a horse. And then in competition, obviously, I'm very competitive I prefer winning. It seemed like whenever I needed him that much, if I just went to a little weekend show, neither one of us were totally inspired. And yet when it got to the big deals, the international competitions and the world shows and all that stuff. He could tell, my inspiration and I could feel his. And oftentimes when I would come out of the arena at those big events, I would go, wow, where did you come from? and those of us who train and show, we understand that what we hope for is to get it, get our horse doing so much that when we do go show, we'll get hopefully 80%, just because of the distractions and all those other things. But I would walk out of the arena and go, that was 120. That was more than you've ever done at home. And he did that so many times for me. So that's the handing me his heart thing. Whenever I needed it, it was a very cool experience, the things that he did.
it's amazing when you get to that level with the horse and you know, like you said, that they know what you're thinking, you know what they're thinking, and you're just working together so well. And I felt that once before where I thought I had all the horse I had, like, this is what you can do for me. And then went in and it's like, they gave me twice that. It's like, whoa, what happened? Right. And how did it know? Yeah, how did it know that that's the moment, everything's on the line, and instead of falling apart, they rise to the occasion? That's very rare, very cool.
Craig, that's, I'm glad you brought
this. Well, I know.
I was just going to say, I'm glad that this came up.
Yeah, I was just thinking about I hate to interrupt.
Yeah, go ahead.
But I was just thinking about a quote that Ray Hunt made one time, that horses don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And I think, Mary, your experience, the reason your horse did that for you is it knew you cared. And I think Sailing Smart knew I cared about him, too. You know, I think that's very, very important when you have that kind of a connection with a horse.
I think sometimes, too, that people think that professional riders such as yourself or professional competitors in whatever discipline, they have so many horses and they train so many horses over a lifetime. And they have this feeling that you guys just think it's just another horse I'm training, and that you don't get the same squishy, warm feelings about horses that they do, right? That they're special horses, you don't have that relationship, when in fact, we've interviewed 6,200 people over the years, and most of them professional riders, and they all have those relationships with those special horses. Yes, we have all owned horses that, you know, we loved them and everything, but then there's those special ones, and I think you just said that so beautifully.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we love them all. There's no doubt about it. But there are those special ones that just reach inside you and just become part of who you are. And you know, you just share some things, and it's pretty cool that, you know, that you can develop that kind of a connection. And it's, you know, like I said, there's just a few that I've had over the years that have just made kind of an impact on, you know, on me.
If we look at it as it relates to life and your relationships with other humans, we all have acquaintances, lots of acquaintances. And then in our lifetimes, unfortunately, there's only a few that really touch you and that you have that special bond with that lasts a lifetime. And, you know, we all wish there were 100 of those, right? But there's not in most people's lives. Mm. There's maybe 10. And you're living an entire life of 70 years, so it makes sense that it's going to be the same way with your animals too.
Well, you know, in my position, many of the horses that I ride actually do belong to somebody else, and they've entrusted me to, you know, create something for them, you know, to build a horse and to, you know, possibly go show it to myself, but oftentimes it's for them. And, you know, I often say that a good horseman is not the one that can make one go. A good horseman is the one that's sad to see one go. And so, you know, given that they generally belong to somebody else, there is a point in time when the horse does go. Yeah. And, those are sad days, you know, when, you know, if you have put in, you know, months and years into a horse and created something out of it and it's not yours. You know, and that's a tough deal, but, you know, there are those occasional horses that just, you'll never forget them. They made quite an impact. That's for sure.
Or it is yours and it's just time for that horse to move along to a situation that's probably going to be better than the one that you
have. Well, true enough.
Right? Right? Same thing.
That is so true. Yeah. There's a lot of, sure, we raise horses and obviously, you know, many of the ones we've raised have had that kind of an impact on me too, but I do understand, and it is, you know, one of the things Pat talks about is that, yes, horses or people teach horses, but horses teach people too. And it is kind of a fun thing when you have created one that can go out in the world and teach people.
Mary, I know you just sold your horse Jax, right? Yeah.
Yes, thing. I'm trying not to start
crying your eyeballs
right
out
because this is
oh,
very timely.
Yeah, I know. Wow. Yeah.
So my wonderful horse that I brought this weekend, you know, I was hoping to bring Guthrie, you know, because he's my horse. I taught all this fancy stuff. And of course, he's coming back from his navicular issues, but he wasn't ready for this weekend. So I pulled out my old trusty Mustang Jax. And Jax is that horse I was talking about, actually. You know, he's this humble, low to the ground pony that I got him from Mustang Makeover. He's really quiet, easygoing. And I thought, about like halfway through, the event, like the training period, I thought, well, you're doing okay. Like, you're really quiet. I can show that, you know, but you're not really athletic. So, you know, we'll just do the best we can. And all of a sudden he came out one day and he started dragging his little butt in the ground. His little cow-hocked butt just started dragging in the ground. I thought, oh my gosh, that was a fluke. That was great. What a great ride. And then the next day he dug deeper and I thought, wow, who 2 days in a row, really, you know, what are the chances? But I wasn't banking on it. There's no way this horse should have been able to do that for me. And just like for a period of 30 days, he just kept getting, you know, grittier and tougher and better. And he ended up doing amazing at the makeover. And I took him home. I said, you're never going to have to work that hard again. You've done more than you could ever do. You've won more money than horses that are worth 10 times, you know, that I paid 10 times as much as I did for you. And, but, you know, and he's been a great horse, you know, when I need something quiet, I can pull him off pasture and go, but I've known for a long time that, I'm not going to push him anymore, than he already does. He's quiet as all get out. He's, you know, just a great horse. He doesn't need to be turning and burning and all that kind of stuff. That's just not really his MO. And so I thought, you know, I kept my very first horse through her life and I took good care of her. But my one regret was that I didn't send her on to teach some other little girl how to ride. She was happy, but I kind of wish that I had shared her instead of just keeping her to myself. And I started to think the same thing with Jax. I'm like, you know, I don't really have any kids that need a lesson horse and I don't trail ride unless I'm training young horses on the trail. And so you need to go to someone who wants to do that and you're their horse and you know, you're their whole world. And I think I found that home this weekend. It didn't make it any less hard. I bawled my eyes out and thought, this selling horses business is for the birds. I'm just going to keep all my horses from now on. But it was absolutely the right thing to do. Yeah.
We're actually trying to encourage her to sell a few, Craig. We're actually...
I may have one or two.
It's a hard thing.
Oh, it is.
Hey, Craig, do you mind helping us out with a listener question that, or a situation that actually came up in our listener Facebook page? And Mary will explain it, but do you mind helping us out with it?
I'd be glad to help.
All right.
So we have a Facebook auditors page, and it's a very, most of the people are very heavily English disciplined. So every once in a while, they'll see something one of us crazy Westerners are doing and go, what the heck are you doing? and this is one of those instances. It was a photo of a well-known horseman, Buck Brenneman, actually, and he's on his good broke saddle horse. And it looks like he's working a young horse or a colt and he's got a lariat around its hind leg. And so if you've never seen that done before, you've never done it, you've never seen it in person. It stirred up a lot of conversation of why would you do that? Couldn't the horse get hurt? What's the point? Are you trying to break the horse's spirit? So I put in my own two cents on why you would ever want to rope a horse's foot. And I just wanted to know if that's something you've ever done with your horses or if you have any thoughts about it.
Mm-hmm. Sure. It was usually an accident.
Which is a good reason to practice.
Oh God, he's foot in a rope.
Broke your horse's foot.
Now what do I do? I know the picture you're talking about. I have seen that. And what I think probably stirred up a great deal of conversation is people probably assumed all he did was rope the horse's foot and then started dragging it around. You know, there was what was missed was the, you know, probably days of preparation that went into that. You know, getting the horse used to just something being around its legs and all. You don't just stick a horse a foot on a or a rope on a horse's foot and start pulling. You know, there's all kinds of things that go into it, so that when you do get to that stage, it works. You know, tons of preparation. But yes, I have done it. Now, one of the reasons that I do it is, you know, for those of us that like to go on trail rides, we know that occasionally you could get a horse stuck in something, you know, whether there is a rope on the ground or whether there is, you know, a wire or something like that. And I don't want my horse to panic in that situation. I want him to go, hey, there's something around my foot. I think I'll stop, you know, and then you can avoid quite a wreck. So there's a safety feature involved in that too. And yet from, you know, the perspective of what a horse is learning, you just teach a horse to yield to different things. You know, that same person that would question whether that was a good idea is the same person that when they're sitting up there, they're going to lay a leg against their side and expect the horse to move over. Well, you know, it's interesting how horses can relate to different things. And, you know, so we use ropes a lot, not just on their feet, but, you know, I'll attach a rope to a saddle horn and I'll throw it over their hip and I'll pull on it. Their first instinct is to push against it until they figure out, you know, that the release is actually step away from the rope. And so I think they're very good ways to teach a horse to become a little bit more accepting of things and recognize you as a little bit of a leader. You know, yeah, we can lead them by the nose, but when you can lead them by the foot, boy, they've really accepted you as a leader. And, you know, you've kind of gotten in there just a little bit deeper. And, you know, and of course we wouldn't want to hurt a horse. And so we would recognize that if the horse was in a situation and the rope was around the foot and they started kicking, and that's where, you know, a lot of people would go wrong. They'd go, hey, I saw that picture, and they rope a horse's foot and they pull on it. And all of a sudden this kick fest happens. And, you know, now they are in a whole bunch of trouble. And, so, you know, that's why there'd be preparation that goes into it. But, you know, I think it's a very positive thing to do with a horse. I don't do it with all of them, but there are certain horses that, you know, especially if they are funny around their feet and legs and stuff like that, I think it is a pretty good stage to go to.
You know, Craig, I drive horses, and this is a key critical thing for driving horses, because I don't care how good a driver you are. There are times when the horse is going to get that trace or something else is going to get wrapped around the horse's leg. Fortunately, I have a Hackney pony who's a little on the Hackney pony side. But when something gets wrapped around his leg, if he gets messed up in the harness or you're harnessing up and, you know, he pulls ahead or whatever, he will just stop. He knows if something's wrapped around his leg, it's time to stop. And deal with the situation, right. But that's not usually the case, right?
No, that is generally not the case. Yeah, they'll feel that and they'll just get into a panic and boy, then things go bad. And, so yeah, you know, in your case with driving, I could see it being incredibly important to teach horses that when things are around their legs, just stop.
Yeah. Otherwise things go really bad.
It's like, well, you know, with that specific photograph in context, you know, these guys who are these Great Basin buckaroos or the guys up in the West and the Northwest, they live with a rope. They start in colts. There's a rope on their saddle. They are taking that rope down the first ride because those colts, a lot of them are going to be at brandings and they're going to be working cattle and working stock. And so it's not just good enough that they're not fearful of the rope swinging around them or even dragging something with the rope. That rope, if you rope enough, is going to be on every part of the horse's body. I found myself in a wreck many years ago when I roped something and I accidentally got the rope under my stirrup fender and it touched the horse's side and it was disastrous. Mm-hmm. I mean, we all lived, guys do this as a matter of, it's just like everything else. It's like teaching your horse to lead. You need to, what if that rope goes under your tail, around your hind end, around your belly, around your flank? Not that they're going to pull really tight around a horse's flank, but they want them to get used to that feeling. And I know at like Buck's clinics, I've seen some of those kids going around roping each other's horse's feet. And it's not this big crazy wreck that happens. Those horses just get used to having that rope go around their feet. And so, you know, I use it in the same manner of I don't do it from a saddle horse because I'm not quite that experienced yet. I do it from the ground and I don't need to wear gloves because, you know, if you're burning your hands, you're pulling too hard or you're not prepped right. But I rope all four of their feet and I teach them to lead and yield to all four feet because you never know if that horse is going to step in something. You're running across the pasture and they step in a bundle of hay wire, or they kick in another horse through a fence and get their foot caught. I had this little stud that had opened his gate and got into a pen that was next to some other horses. And he was messing with them. There were these two double gates that were chained and he was messing with them over the gates and he struck out and his foot came down on top of the chain and in between those two gates. And the only reason I found him Yeah, it was very scary. And I don't know when he did it, but when I found him, I just heard this kind of light clank, clank, clank noise. I'm like, what is that? So I walked over there and he's sitting there gently pulling his leg back, clank, clank. And I was like, oh my God. And I went and got him untangled, looked at his foot. It was not swollen. There wasn't a hair missing. Now I can't say for sure whether hobble training prepped it for it, but what I saw that horse doing was pulling, feeling pressure and giving. You know, you horses are going to find ways to hurt themselves, but you want to prep them for every contingency. And the other way that I've seen roping a hind foot work, I was at this really great event a few years ago called the Horsemen's Reunion. And they invited 20 horsemen, and we had 40 colts. We each had 2 colts to start. And these things were wild, woolly ranch colts that were sort of kind of halter broke. Like, mine had to be ponied to my round pin. And we had 6 days to start them. There was no agenda. You didn't have to do anything. You know, it wasn't a contest. So you could take whatever time you needed. Well, there was one guy there who was a little less experienced, and he had a pretty tough colt, and he went to saddle it, and his timing was really off, and he made some mistakes. Well, the saddle ended up under that colt's belly, and you can't make that kind of mistake on a horse like that. So it really wigged him out, really messed him up. So now he's terrified of the saddle, doesn't trust his person, and they've got to find a way to fix this. And a horseman who was there at Magnifico this weekend, Martin Black, he worked that colt by roping hind foot. And like I said, it's very gentle. It's very calm. He had masterful timing. And sometimes you move a horse's feet to get to their mind, but sometimes restricting movement can also help as well. And so with this colt, he taught this colt, okay, he would walk along with the colt, and every so often he just take a hold of that rope and ask the colt to stop. And he worked on this over and over and over till when he dallied, that colt knew to stop right there. And so that way they found, it's like, you know, the door that they were using to get to that colt's mind caved in. So they had to go around and open a window, and that's what he did. And they were able to take a potentially disastrous situation. This colt is really messed up about getting saddled. Mm-hmm. And they were able to get him safely saddled and ridden. And the guy rode him while Martin was standing behind the colt with that foot just gently around his leg. And he kept the rope really loose and would go with the colt. And every so often he'd just say, hey, remember how to stop? And it would just kind of interrupt that colt anytime he got to thinking, oh, I'm kind of nervous. And that colt knew just to stop and say, okay, wait for further instructions.
Right. That is so cool.
That's very good. Well, Craig, thank you so much for joining us this morning. We really appreciate it. It's CraigJohnsonInternational.com is the website, and I assume all of your information is on there.
It is.
And you have upcoming clinics.
Well, thank you.
Anything
have enjoyed
coming up soon that you want to let everybody know about?
Oh, my goodness, yeah. I've got clinics coming up all over the place. I've got Colorado this weekend. I'll be just outside of Denver, and then let's see, where do I go from there? England in June. I've got New Jersey, Oklahoma coming up the end of May. We do get around, and but we've got a bunch of horses in training, so I stay busy at the house too whenever I've got the chance to stay here.
Very good. Well, thank you, Craig. Appreciate it.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Well, Mary, I have a, before we go, I have a follow-up that I want to get to, because this just came in from a listener, and now you know I won't be able to find it. When you talked before about keeping a horse from, all right, let me try and find it here. When you talked before about keeping a horse from, or teaching a horse to stand still, the follow-up question to that came in from a listener, and of course I can't find it, but it was basically, what do you think about the method of turning the horse's head, neck?
I just happen to be looking at that question.
Okay,
right,
good.
Now.
So if you have it, that's terrific. Because
from
Brad sent that in. Yes.
Yeah,
okay.
Watkins.
Yeah.
He He said, don't know if there's any time left, but what does Mary Kay Kitzmiller think about holding a horse's head to the side until it stands still and softens? And this sounds, and someone actually made the comment I was thinking. She said, I just came across this for the very first time a few days ago. I heard it as a Clinton Anderson method of making sure they're listening to you. She said, I did not like it, but I'm willing to listen to further explanation if there is one. Love to hear Mary's opinion. So that is kind of a very general, vague idea of lateral flexion. And lateral flexion has a ton of applications across all disciplines. I've seen many trainers interpret it differently. The Clinton Anderson method is one that I started out using, and it's I would say it's very dumbed down. It's meant for people who maybe are less experienced with horses and they need very simple steps just to get their feet wet. And pretty much you slide your hand down the rein and you hold your hand on your hip and you wait for the horse to put slack in the rein or for him to touch your boot. And the horse, you're waiting for two things before you're going to release the pressure of the rein. And you're waiting for the horse's feet to stand still and for him to soften. So that was pretty good for me when I very first started out and I couldn't handle a lot of intricacy and elaboration in training. But there are some downsides to that too. So for one, if you ask your horse to bring his head all the way over to, say, your boot, the horse is not going to be able to give you flexion with quality. What he's going to do, and I see this all the time, he's going to drop his outside ear and twist his head so that he can even reach your boot. They're very flexible, but, you know, he's going to have to torque himself pretty good. For most cases, you do not need to ask your horse to flex that far. I try, as a general rule, not to ask them to come past the point of their shoulder. Now, that's not to say if a horse is getting ready to buck me off, I'm not going to bend him around like a pretzel. I guess I might ask a horse to flex that deep a time or two just so I know he can do it and he knows he can do it without panicking. If you're talking about flexing for asking your horse to stand and relax or to use it in a one rein stop, I have changed my opinion on this over the years. I will flex my horse at a standstill to teach him softness and give him a little job to do if they're a little nervous. But I tend to ask my horse to connect that head and neck to their feet more often than I ask him to stand still in the very beginning, because I've seen a lot of rubber-necked horses that can still run in a straight line even with their head on your boot. And that's never fun. If you get a horse too rubber-necked, it's going to be like you're riding a headless horse. You have to be able to connect that horse's nose to all four of his feet to have good control, to have quality maneuvers and to stay safe. So I will teach a horse more anymore. If I tip your nose, I do want you to soften to that bridle, but I also want you to step your hindquarters away. And to me, it's like a reset button. If I'm on a young horse, and this is a good exercise. I had a few people ask about horses getting nervous on the trail or getting nervous around other horses. If I have a horse that's getting tense and tight and stiff, and they're thinking of trying something because they're nervous or scared or frustrated or whatever, I will tip that nose and ask them to step their hindquarters around about 180 degrees. And it's like hitting reset. It's almost like the horse is going around like, oh my gosh, I'm going to run off. And then you tip their nose, send them around 180 degrees. And they're like, wait, what was I doing? And then they think about it for a second. They're like, oh yes, I was about to run off. And they kind of build. And so then I'll just take their nose the other way. Ask them to step their hindquarters around 180 degrees. And they're kind of like, wait, what was I doing? And I just keep gently doing that and just hit that reset button over and over and over again until the horse goes, you know what? I'm okay. So I like to yield the hindquarters. I will ask my horse, once I've had a few rides on it and I feel like I've got a pretty good connection to their feet, I will ask them to flex at a standstill to work on softness and to give them a little job to do. And here's two things that I think you should look for when you're asking for flexion. You want flexion with quality. You just don't want to torque your horse's head around. So one of the things is, as your horse brings his head around, if I were to lay a ruler or a level across your horse's ears as they're flexing left and right, would that level stay level? If it tips one side or the other, you're losing quality. You don't want that horse to drop an outside ear or an inside ear. The other thing I would do is if I were to lay a ruler across, if my horse has a blaze, for instance, and I were to lay a ruler up and down that blaze, is that ruler going to stay perfectly straight up and down as it comes around? If it leans one way or the other, you're losing some quality. So I'll take a little flexion at first in order to maintain quality. Ask them to go a little deeper over time. You shouldn't need to bend them very much. Just working on this is just a little something you can do to help your horse relax, soften, get them used to doing something standing still. So I think there's a lot of benefits, but there's a few caveats there.
Jennifer, you had a comment? I think professional.
I put her to sleep again.
Yeah, professional podcaster Jennifer's on mute again.
Yeah, I'm seriously over here trying to keep the quality down, quality up. Caveat, I think, is the key word here, and I think you've covered pretty near all of them. Having your horse flex at the halt, and for that matter, flex while moving, is probably one of the most used and least understood exercises out there, in that it is so easy for the rider to just pull one rein and get the horse's head to move over. That's so easy. You can do everything else with your body wrong and make that happen. And that's, I think, the trap people fall in. People see a professional using the exercise properly, and they don't recognize all the other things going on, and they might not see it in context. So they figure, oh, well, when my horse does or doesn't do A, B, or C, all I have to do is zing his nose around to my toe, and it's all going to be good again. And we ruin a lot of good horses that way.
I can always tell what program a horse comes from if it's standing still in the arena and its head is going left and right like a bobblehead and the rider's not touching the reins. I'm like, I know what program you bought. that's all I'm going to say about that. But yeah, as with anything, there can be too little, there can be too much. Everyone has their own preferences. I'm looking more these days. In the beginning, when I was a dumb rider who was in danger of falling off all the time, it was very good to have my horse kind of rubbernecked where I could just torque him around and save my own butt from falling off. But as I've said before, you know, when we start out, and this is something we all go through as trainers, so there's no shame in it, we sort of dumb the horse down to our level. So a lot of trainers will teach that flexing as just a way to keep people alive, take your horse's head around if you feel like he's going to do anything to you. And that saves our butts a lot of time in the very beginning. But, we should all be on the path to developing feel and wisdom and experience. And eventually, I think the goal should be rise to the level of your horse. Don't bring him down to your level. Feel a horse out and start getting lighter and softer with your hands. And start, when you ask for something, what am I looking for? I used to just torque a horse's head around because someone told me, wait for his nose to touch your boot. And that's when you let go. It's like, well, now that I've grown up, now it's like, well, what do I want? How far do I want him to go? Why do I want to do this with him? What exactly am I looking for? What do I want his ears to do? What do I want his eyes to look like? How do I want his mouth to be? Where do I want his nose? And it's just a learning process. We all go through it. Hello, am I alone?
No, I was on mute. So
I have cursed you guys with the podcast curse because of the insult I suffered
to us today. Well, we go on mute so that the sound quality is better, and then we get so wrapped up in Mary's talking, we forget to come off mute. I was
there talking you guys
away.
Pearls of wisdom, I and know. Then I stop talking, and it's just crickets. I'm like, well, I'm a master horseman. I will have you know.
You need an audience. We need an audience there that's not on mute.
I was not treated that this way. this weekend. Jennifer, they knew what they had.
Could you please do a new opener for her for next month that includes Master Horseman in it?
Because don't take that soundbite. That'll be really sad.
I think that soundbite's perfect.
That should be it. It opens with me screaming, "I'm a Master Horseman."
Yeah, 1 hour 35 minutes. Jennifer, is where you can find that a little soundbite that we can put in the opener. I'm a Master Horseman. Damn it. Respect my authority.
Do you know who I am? Yeah.
A little Cartman humor there. Sorry. All right. Do you know that show just got renewed for 22nd episode or 22nd season? Respect
it's
my authority.
It's satire South Park. Of our time. It's genius. I love that show. I love how when they're not talking about singing Christmas poo, they take an issue and they work both sides of it, which is genius.
Yeah, they pretty much make both sides sound like crap. It's
like, you know, yeah, exactly. They make us all look like buttheads.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, they make those shows like an episode a week, which explains the high quality of it.
Oh, okay. I get what you're saying. Yeah. So they're not trying to do 10 in 1 week. Now, let's talk movies here a minute. Did you go see the movie last weekend? Guardians of the Galaxy 2?
I didn't. I haven't seen it.
Ugh. Get there, Mary. I thought we were going to have this movie conversation on the show today.
I've been too busy being a master horseman and imparting my wisdom to masses. I haven't had time for trivial things like movies.
You better get your ass out there. I want to hear your opinion of it. I was waiting and dying to talk. Nobody else we know has seen it either. I'm going to talk to anybody about it.
I will see it tomorrow if my Mustangs don't kick my teeth out. And I would be happy to hog more time on someone else's show to come talk about it.
Okay. Well, that's a deal. And of course, we didn't even get a chance to talk about the fact that you're doing Mustang Makeover and all that other crap because you're a master horseman. We didn't even get a chance to talk about it. But I tell you,
I'm running on fumes. I am just, I don't know what day it is. I don't know who I am anymore.
Well, if you're running,
it's just one thing.
Well, you should run on fumes more often because you're funnier and you were just terrific today. So,
are you saying I'm not always hilarious?
God, I can't win. I'm going to say goodbye now. What's your website, Mary? And if people want to send horses to you for training or find out where you're going to be next, what can they do?
MaryKitzmiller.com. I have got to update that thing. You can find me there. The next big thing I'm going to be when I'm not being chased around the pen by Mustangs is I'm going to be at the main event in Scottsdale, Arizona at the end of this month.
Not too far from where Jamie is. And also, you sell some tremendous stuff, and I see that some of our listeners have been buying some of your products, your homemade stuff.
Yes, yeah. I will be, again, something else I have to update. But if you're interested, just contact me on Facebook. I've got a bunch of Yeti tumblers, not Yetis, but, you know, tumblers that were laser engraving and a bunch of artwork. Our company for that is Road Trip Brand. You can find us on Etsy. I promise I will update it.
There you go. Very good. Thank you, Mary. All right, everybody. All right. We'll be back tomorrow. Jennifer will be here. Jennifer will be here putting your really bad ads together because it is really bad ads day. So get your ads over to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. We have some terrific prizes for you this month. So get those ads in. We only have two more really bad ads in this month because we're going on vacation. So be sure to get your ads in for this week and next week. And I see that also people have been sending ads in that they're reading. We really like when you do that. It's less work for us. So send your ads in. You can just record them on your phone, on your memo recorder or whatever, and then email them off to Jennifer, the MP3 files or whatever files you got, and we'll get them on the air. So thanks a bunch, everybody. Talk to you soon.